Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Wednesday morning. It's June 6th. 54 degrees under mostly sunny skies here in Old Town Park City. Heber City Airport reporting 53 degrees. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Wednesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back. We're looking at a mixture of sun and clouds. It's going to be a very toasty afternoon. Temperatures climbing near 80 in Park City. We'll see those highs climbing into the mid-80s in the Heber Valley. Again, you'll notice an increase in some scattered clouds today, but still pretty warm out there. As we go into your Thursday, we're looking at that sunshine returning across the area. Temperatures may briefly dip back into the upper 70s in Park City for a high, with temperatures staying in the mid-80s in the Heber Valley. As we make our way into Friday, get ready. The core of that high-pressure ridge moves over the area and towards the Four Corners, so you know what that means. That brings the peak of the heat across the area. High temperatures will climb into the low 80s for us in Park City on your Friday. As we get into the Heber Valley, we're looking at high temperatures flirting with the 90-degree mark. Now, as we move into your Saturday, it starts off very warm out there with those gusty southwesterly winds building in across the area. We're going to see that elevated fire danger threat moving across the Wasatch Back as well as we move into the early parts of the weekend. High temperatures, yeah, they're going to soar. How about mid-80s for your Saturday in Park City? I've got temperatures climbing into the low 90s in the Heber Valley as we get you through your Saturday afternoon as that front makes its way in. Could have a few clouds with that front Saturday night into Sunday, so we'll call it a mixture of sun and clouds on your Sunday. The winds will stay up, but they'll come out of the north and west. That'll bring back some slightly cooler air, so we'll dip it back down into the mid-70s in Park City on your Sunday. High temperatures in the upper 70s in the Heber Valley. But don't worry, that ridge of high pressure builds back into the area as we head into early next week. So those highs start to warm back up to around 80 degrees for us in Park City on your Monday, mid-80s in the Heber Valley. And we'll continue with those mid to upper 80s on Tuesday in the Heber Valley and low to mid-80s for us in the Park City area. Overall, dry the next 7 days. Let's look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. Coming up, I'll be checking in with the executive director of Park City Sunday Market, Kate McChesney. The market opens Sunday for the season. Park City Manager Adam Lenhardt and Deputy Park City Manager Heather Steddon will preview this week's City Council meeting. And we'll be talking about the Trails, Trash, and Tunes event with Park City and Summit County Stormwater Managers Christine Williams and Kelsey Christensen. Then stay tuned for The Mountain Life. Today's guests include Anna Nijoni and Crystal Moosman, talking more about this year's Leadership Park City class undertaking called the Summit Mural Project. Then Amy McDonald, founder of Brawley Arts, shares information about their 30th anniversary celebration happening this Saturday and why Indigenous perspectives and the arts matter to their mission. Then Jake Dreyfus of Grow the Flow talks about the group's upcoming Lake Fest in Salt Lake on June 13th and shares ways that you can get involved in saving this critical part of Utah's ecosystem. All of that coming up on The Mountain Life, heard, of course, every Wednesday from 9 to 10. Taking a look now at some local news, shakeups at the Environmental Protection Agency are changing how forever chemicals are regulated. KPCW's Connor Thomas looks into what that means for Summit County's drinking water.
Park City has put millions of dollars into removing harmful metals from its drinking water, but it found a less well-understood contaminant in its wells in 2022, PFAS. A growing recognition that these polyfluoroalkyl substances linger in the environment and can be harmful has led to federal regulation. The Environmental Protection Agency announced changes to those regulations in May. One proposed change will let local providers apply for an extra 2 years to limit the amount of PFAS in their drinking water. That pushes the deadline from 2029 to 2031. The changes don't impact Park City, where the groundwater contamination stems from fluorocarbon ski wax. Water quality and treatment manager Michelle DeHaan says the city is already testing for and limiting PFAS.
What we're doing is blending water from the Three Kings water treatment plant that has no PFAS in it with the well water to concentrations that are well below the new drinking water standards established by EPA for PFAS.
EPA also announced an about-face on four of the six kinds of PFAS it regulates. It won't set standards for those since it lumped them together rather than regulating them individually.
It's not really lessening the control over the regulation. It was more of a challenge where EPA did not follow its own rulemaking criteria.
The Summit County government's water company, the Mountain Regional Water Special Service District, is already in compliance, too. General Manager Andy Garland says PFAS tests are coming in well under EPA's limit of four parts per trillion.
Which would be, four drops of water in 20 Olympic-sized swimming pools. So we're good. For now.
The EPA has only targeted PFAS in drinking water thus far. Summit County taxpayers may see a more significant impact if or when it turns to wastewater. The PFAS used in nonstick pans and waterproof outdoor clothing, for example, travels from household drains to treatment plants. The water is discharged there into local streams. Mike Lewers is the general manager of the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District.
We're waiting for guidance in the way of, regulatory limits before we make, a significant financial investment to remove those compounds.
He says it could be years before the EPA decides how much PFAS wastewater plants are allowed to discharge. Park City Municipal and Mountain Regional Water are financial supporters of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
The Park City Sunday Market celebrating its 20th anniversary and will be back for another season on Sunday. On the phone with a preview is Executive Director Kate McChesney. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks. So who would have thought, Kate, 20 years already?
Oh, my gosh. Well, technically we say 19 because next year we're going to celebrate our big 20th because we did the COVID year.
Okay. All right. Well, talk maybe just real quick about how the market has evolved since it first started in 2006.
So 2006, it was more of a flea market with nothing to do on Sundays. So Jules and Julie and Kimberly, the three beautiful women that started the market, came together and approached Park City and approached Salt Lake and said, hey, we want to do this amazing, little street fair on Sundays in Park City. We kicked off in May. We went all the way through October. We had 17 Sundays way back then. About 35 vendors, maybe 500 people showed up. But all the sustainable elements that those girls put into place are still active to this day. So we still, are a zero waste market. We still have a bike valet. We still have featured artists, featured chefs. We have, free booths for farmers, free booths for Park City Main Street merchants. And so all of those things. But yeah, here we are, right? So now we go back 19, 20 years. Now we have 11 Sundays, but we still pull off anywhere between 15 to 20,000 people every Sunday, and almost 200 vendors rotate every week.
Wow. Well, start with the details. When, where, and how much on Sunday?
So, free, first of all, unless you're planning on parking somewhere around Main Street, then I would definitely not recommend that. But the market itself is free. We're going to kick off this June 7th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. We encourage everybody to bike, bus, or walk to the market. Again, we have a free, secure bike valet, which is manned by the Park City High School bike children. So those are the things that I would highly recommend. Other than that, it's going to be, live music starting at noon, but we'll have quiet music from 10 till 12. The bar opens at 10 with our world famous Bloody Marys and all these wonderful frozen cocktails. The vendors are popping. We've got some flowers coming in this week. We've got a lot of youth vendors and a lot of youth musicians that'll be playing music all up and down Main Street till 5 o'clock.
All right. So how many vendors do you put on the street each week?
Just shy of 200 rotates every week on the street. So everything from, we have historic Main Street Alliance vendors helping us. We have Park City Performing Artists. We have a couple nonprofits, and then everything from, art to food, food booths and ceramics and photography and all this make your own. So no importers or any direct sales. Everything is real crafted by the individual.
Yeah. So what do you most excited about as the new season gets underway?
The The weather looks amazing, and I'm just excited to be outside and enjoying our beautiful historic Main Street, but also just seeing a lot of our friends and family, as we call them, that have been with the market for many years. Our entire staff of volunteers and even our Burley crew, they've been with me for years, and I'm so thankful for them. A lot of them live right here. We have a couple new high school kids joining us this summer that they're, you know, themselves have encouraged themselves to get out and work this summer. So just excited to see everybody and celebrate Main Street in the beautiful way.
So organizing a weekly event of this scale can't be easy. I guess, what are some of the biggest challenges that your team faces, you know, each season?
Yesterday, one of our vehicles didn't start, and that took me about 5 hours. But other than that, you can just imagine, right? We're not driving these brand new shiny vehicles. I mean, I'm driving a 2006 Expedition. Welcome to the nonprofit world. So here I am last night at 6 o'clock going and getting a battery and, you know, getting my husband to come replace the battery to get these things fired up. So we're dragging all of our signs and everything. But the good news is over the years, we've created a checklist. And so, you know, as long as we just keep checking those boxes on the days that I've kind of delegated, here's what happens in February, March, April, May, right up until this week. You know, it is a little seamless, so not a whole lot of hiccups.
Yeah. The market's become a major summer attraction. I guess, what opportunities does it provide for the entrepreneurs and the makers who don't have that traditional storefront?
Well, and exactly that. So we, as a nonprofit, our entire nonprofit mission is to continually keep the booth spaces down and really low. So an average booth space is about $150 to $250 every Sunday. That's going to put you in front of 15 to 20,000 people, and that's really going to help you build your business plan. We've incubated businesses such as Nosh, Sandwich, Sammy's Bistro, 11 House. You know, we've had all sorts of jewelers, you know, gone big, photographers that now have photography in some of the nicest galleries on Main or in the nicest hotels. And so it really is exactly that. Brick and mortar, as we all know, is super expensive. And so unless you really get your feet wet before you take that hurdle, this is a great starting point.
Yeah. And how do you think the market contributes to Park City's summer economy? I know you say that as a nonprofit, you don't do those economic benefit studies, but how do you think it fits in there?
Well, I just know that if I'm bringing 15 to 20,000 people every Sunday, there's definitely money being spent on Main Street. I do know we go and talk to all the concierges. We drop off rack cards. I know that there's, you know, a great location for the buses from all the hotels to drop off. All of the concierges are super excited. It's something to do with their guests. Sundays are always still in this world, you know, oh my gosh, we can't drink on Sundays, or it's Utah. It's really hard, you know, to figure out something to do, but we now have people that call us that say, are making sure we're coming, we're staying at the Hilton, want to make sure that you guys are going to be actively programming on this particular Sunday. And so I just know that we're making a really great hit.
Yeah. Have you seen changes in vendor participation or consumer spending trends over the past few years, just kind of given the economy?
So last year, I mean, we're really fortunate in the way in our world of the vendors, that the vendors really do want to continue having these opportunities. So we're sold out. We've been sold out since March. I've got about 150 vendors that still don't have any dates out of about 800 that applied. And so in that world, that small business entrepreneurship is still very active and alive. And I hadn't gotten our 2025 spending tax as of yet. I had reached out to the state. But typically, you know, they'll get into us about $170,000 to $180,000 in tax revenue that we provided over the last couple of years for the year, which if you kind of look at a 9 to 10%, you know, overall, we're bringing about $1.6 to $1.7 million to Main Street and to these small entrepreneurs.
Yeah, and that's over 14 Sundays, right?
And that, well, 11 now.
11.
But yes, yeah, and that's, yeah, and so that's just exactly that, right, divided by 11.
Yeah.
So last year, it didn't feel too light to us. Our vendors were all still really, really happy, and we were still sold out back then. So,
awesome. So as you mentioned, nonprofits and community groups kind of play a role in the market experience. How so?
So we offer nonprofit free booth space. KPCW has been a booth at the market numerous years. In Rotary, running of the balls, we give them two free booth spaces leading up to their largest fundraiser, running of the balls for Miners Day. We have PC Caps joining us. We actually have even Park City joining us to talk about the new transit program that they're putting together. We have, you know, birds and dogs and Nuzzles joining us every Sunday on the street to do their Nuzzles puppy hour in the morning from 10 to noon. So it's just really making sure that the community understands how many nonprofits we have in this town, and then as well supporting them in whatever way, shape, or form, whether or not they're adopting a dog or they're signing up for a gala or they're buying balls or they're just hearing maybe about your club for KPCW so that they could belong to the Broadcasters Club.
Awesome. So what do you, why do you think the markets remain such a popular tradition for, again, nearly two decades?
It's a great time. It's a lot of fun. It's live music. It's dancing. We're in this amazing setting on historic Main Street. The vibe is there. People want to shop. People want to see their friends and their family. Our opening day and our closing day is one of the biggest locals day there is. I've seen numerous of my child growing up in the school system and then being on the ski team and then being part of the soccer program. I see all of these families that come through the market. And when you are here locally and you have family coming to town, it's just a great staple to bring everybody to.
Yeah. And yeah, I know you also carve out a corner for kids. What can they expect if they visit the market?
So we have face painters. A couple Sundays, we're going to have the rock climbing wall. We've got the, you know, sticky, wonderful frozen drinks and the little frozen snow cones. And then as well, there's a ton of youth vendors selling youth items. So there's always a little something for everyone.
All right. Do you have off the top of your head what the live music schedule is for Sunday?
So I know I've got Dana coming in this week with Silver King and then followed up by a bluegrass band. But at 10 a.m., I will have Danny Nolan. Danny has been playing with us acoustically for the last couple years. He's a 16-year-old Park City High School kid, and he rocks the stage for the first couple hours acoustically before we get those two big live bands on.
All right. And I guess just looking ahead, what's your vision for the future of the Silly Market for the next 10, 20 years?
Yeah, well, I know we definitely have a contract through 2030, so that is a little bit of a peace of mind that we haven't had for many, many, many years. But prior, you know, after that, it's still exactly that. It's still really concentrating on those entrepreneurs, concentrating on the small businesses, hoping that these small businesses can turn into brick and mortar, even here locally in Park City. And so it's just really concentrating on helping people, you know, strive and go on and do wonderful things with their life.
Okay, Kate, anything else you want to mention?
No, just again, please bike, bus, or walk. Also, this weekend looks a little warm. We do love your dogs, but this particular weekend might not be a great idea because the pavement's just going to be way too hot.
All right, Kate McChesney is the executive director of the Park City Sunday Market. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Leslie. Have a great day.
Well, a Silver Creek Estates property billed as the ultimate family compound will remain on the nightly rental market despite efforts to shut it down. KPCW's Connor Thomas has the latest on Summit County's attempts to regulate short-term rentals.
A 9-acre property in Silver Creek Estates has become symbolic of the challenges facing both operators and regulators of short-term rentals around Park City. Summit County received complaints that the property known as Small Valley Ranch was really an event center and sought to shut it down in 2024. Owner Gregory Dell won a partial victory in April when a judge said he could keep his STR license for now. Of the estimated 1,900 short-term rentals in Summit County, new county data shows 1,300 are properly licensed and accounted for. Wednesday, the county council will discuss the efforts to ensure those rentals comply with local rules. Community Development Director Peter Barnes says that would include extreme examples like Dell's property, billed as the, quote, ultimate family compound.
Part of the short-term rental conversation that we're going to be having at council might actually be looking to address situations like this in the future on a more general basis.
Small Valley Ranch includes a 7,000-square-foot house, 20,000-square-foot horse arena, and 6,300-square-foot entertainment facility with a basketball court. Dell, a Florida-based attorney, ran afoul of county code enforcement when tenants threw a party there during the 2024 Sundance Film Festival. County Civil Attorney Linda Vitti says event centers are not allowed in the Snyderville Basin. But in 3rd District Court this spring, Judge Richard Mrozek told the county Dell should be allowed to rent the house on Airbnb or VRBO. There is a catch. Mrozek's ruling only applies to the house, not the recreation or equestrian facilities, because the judge says his authority is limited in this case. Dell says in court papers the ruling would prohibit nightly renters from entering the basketball gym or riding area. So he's asking the court to reconsider, arguing it's, quote, nonsensical to restrict where short-term renters can go on the property. Its numerous amenities also include a soccer field, full gym, movie screen, and putting green. A butler is available for an additional fee, according to Verbo. A neighbor lodged multiple complaints about Small Valley Ranch before county code enforcement stepped in 2 years ago. Eventually, an administrative court ordered Dell to stop advertising his property as an event center. Summit County later launched a criminal investigation into whether he violated that order, but it never filed charges. In civil court April 16th, Vitti referenced the possibility that Summit County may impose new STR regulations on properties like Dell's. Vitti also says the county may appeal Morosic's ruling. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
The Park City Council meets in work session tomorrow starting at just after 1 o'clock. In the studio with a preview of the meeting is City Manager Adam Lenhart. Also on the phone with me, I have Deputy City Manager Heather Snedden. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Adam, let's start with the vote council took recently on theirs and the mayor's compensation. Maybe explain why such a big jump all at once. I mean, who gets a raise like that besides maybe corporate CEOs?
Oh, that's a great question. I know in this case, the council is looking at Summit County. It's the immediate economic sandbox that they operate in. The council's legislative workload overlaps heavily with the Summit County Council. And for those who voted for the increase, it was determined that local equity outweighed traditional municipal averages. And I think this was an attempt, in their view, to right the ship in terms of how we compensate our elected officials.
So how was this compensation arrived at?
Again, looking primarily at the Summit County Council, we can't escape the headline. Council doubles their own pay. It's a lightning rod. We have to live with that. And it's been interesting to see the narratives that are being discussed in our community around this issue. I would say the most cynical part of that headline, as easy as it is this idea that the council is, you know, sitting in a room voting to enrich themselves. And this exposes to me a fascinating and I would say awkward point about Utah State statute when it comes to elected official compensation. And that is the reality that the city council is the only entity that can legally adjust their own compensation. I can't do it. My staff can't do it. We can't delegate it to, for example, a state board, an independent body. There's no mechanism for residents to vote on that directly. By statutory design, the buck stops entirely with the five people at the dais. And this creates, I think, a unique democratic dilemma. There is never a politically convenient or comfortable time for elected officials to adjust their own compensation.
I'm just going to say, I mean, people do expect to get paid more. I mean, especially with the inflation and the higher prices that we have seen the last several years. But, I mean, to jump that much, I mean, why not, an annual raise instead of just this doubling all of a sudden?
Absolutely. That's part of the narrative that's being discussed. It's a debate about what public service actually is. In our community, on one end of the spectrum, we have people who have a very strong traditionalist viewpoint, residents who believe passionately that local elected office is a civic duty. It's a form of pure community service and volunteerism. And in that view, the reward is the service itself. And if you keep that stipend low, then you ensure that people are running for office out of this sense of pure altruism. That is a perfectly legitimate and valid viewpoint on this topic. On the exact opposite end of the spectrum, we have a modern equity argument. If we keep the compensation too low, then you've created this financial barrier to public service. And of course, every shade of gray in between those two opposite ends of the spectrum. And which of those is right? I think they're all valid. I think they all have some validity. They're valid paths for a community to choose. And the council had to weigh these competing philosophies on the scale. And I think that 4-1 vote represents a deliberate and policy-driven decision to lean toward the latter, to broaden access to public service.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, didn't somebody try to talk him out of it? At least going that much. Again, I mean, a little bit here, and a little bit next year, and a little bit next year, increases does what you're saying it would do, but...
Certainly, there are many ways that this could be applied or could have been applied. I would say the criticism, as I've mentioned, the various ends of the spectrum on this issue, I would say that the overwhelming feedback has been critical. I would say that in that criticism, we were told in great detail exactly where to shove a variety of items. I don't know if I can say that on the radio here, but in that critique also, I would say that we heard some very eloquent, persuasive arguments that led to thoughtful and respectful back and forth communication or conversations in our community. I think the debate has been good. It's mm-hmm. been healthy. And sure.
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, that, I mean, the backlash is pretty vicious. I mean, many pointed out it is about public service. It's not a full-time job. And council members in much larger cities make a lot less. So is there any talk amongst council members now about rethinking that vote?
Like I said, I think there's been very thoughtful conversations on this topic. I know they're hearing our constituents. I know they're hearing from our residents, and I think it has been very thoughtful debate. I think it's been appreciated. I would fiercely defend the right of our residents to be very vocal with their criticism and feedback of our government and how we operate. I couldn't speak to whether or not the council is reconsidering the item. I think, of course, all options are available to the council. They could vote to increase their compensation even further, although that's highly unlikely. They could vote to reduce it, leave it exactly how it is.
Okay, procedurally, they could change the ordinance.
Sure.
Yeah. And so where does the money come from these raises? I mean, it's a drop in the bucket when looking at an $85 million budget. But again, many of us don't get an annual cost of living increase or regular raises. So how about giving us a break on our water rates or recreation fees or even lowering our taxes?
Let's talk about water rates. Well, first on taxes, we're pleased to be able to move into the fiscal year 27 budget with zero talk about a property tax increase. Not on the radar, not necessary. The fiscal year 27 budget is structurally balanced. On water rates, though, speaking of that, I think it'd be a great time to discuss a pivot in our approach right now. So, as I think many of our listeners are aware, the conversation around water rates has been ongoing for quite some time. In fact, a year ago, the city adopted what I would categorize as a very comprehensive set of changes to our water rates. I won't get into the details for the sake of time, but we made a lot of changes to our water rates. The reality, Leslie, is, as you know, Park City residents pay among the highest water rates in the entire state. Last year, we adopted some comprehensive changes to those rates. We did have to come back a few minutes later and make some additional tweaks to that because I think the impacts of those initial changes were more severe than anticipated. What we have now is not quite 1 year's worth of data under these new rates. We do see that our revenues have decreased. Last summer, very interestingly, was hot and dry. This summer, based on what we're seeing in the weather patterns with El Nino, is likely to be a very hot and wet summer. And so we're looking at the proposed water rates, and I appreciate the fantastic work that's been done by our water department staff to look at these rates and say, long-term, as we're managing this fund, what is the best way to do that in a fiscally responsible way? Our water rates in the long-term, the cost to provide that service to our residents is likely going to increase. We're seeing that across the board in the Western United States. Water is a scarce resource. The costs of providing that service are going up. However, where again, we have the highest water rates in the state or among the highest rates, I think the threshold for increasing those rates even further is very high. And so we've been analyzing our rates. We do see a long-term need to at least keep up with inflation. However, given the adjustments that we just made less than a year ago, we've spent a lot of time looking at these rates and saying, are further adjustments needed? What I am recommending to council is that we press pause on those water rates, the proposed increases, so that we can really get the long-term data we need to see how have those rate changes from last year fully affected our budget and our operations, and what do we need to do going forward?
So in addition to the state's highest water rates, it sounds like we may also have the highest paid city council member and mayor. But yeah, that remains to be seen. Budget, though, we've got another discussion. When does the final budget get approved?
It will take place on June 25th.
Okay. Also, the council Thursday will get an updated sales tax report. It looks glum. What does that mean for the budget?
The March sales tax report shows exactly what we saw for ourselves firsthand on the mountain this winter. March was a very bad month, and March is exactly when that the impacts of that weak winter finally showed up in the numbers. It was about a 20% decrease over last March in terms of what we had anticipated for budgeted revenue. It was about 19% down. Fortunately, our budget is not structured around best case scenarios, but we tend to be very conservative in the way that we budget. We will be able to balance this budget. We have healthy reserves, and this is the exact reason why we have those reserves, to level out the occasional down year. At this point, we are looking at last winter as an anomaly, and hopefully this winter is great. We have a lot of snowfall, and that should get us where we would hope to be in terms of revenue. I think the real impact, Leslie, aside from the city's budget, we can manage. We've got contingencies there to help us get through those times. What does concern us is the impact that we saw in town to our businesses, to the business owners, to our employees, and that was a dramatic decrease in their revenues. And so we're very concerned about the health of our local businesses and their ability to weather these downturns.
Yeah, so what point do you start looking at the possibility of increasing property taxes as a way to kind of safeguard against this roller coaster of sales tax revenues?
Our property tax revenue as a percentage of our total budget is actually a very small number. I would say that's not even something that's on our radar. There are many, many mechanisms that we would employ long before we considered a property tax increase. I don't think that is even on the table for discussion.
Okay. I guess I was thinking next year. We're not there this year, but given the future. Heather, let's move to you. Council will consider a $1 million paid parking contract. What's this for?
Yes, the council is going to be asked to consider amending an existing contract we have with Clever City. It's a German company, to standardize parking data collection across our paid parking assets. And this builds on some overhead camera-based sensor systems we already have in place near the post office on Main Street and also in China Bridge. This really allows us to collect information that we can evaluate to understand what parking utilization patterns are, adjust our enforcement strategies as we see what's happening in our parking places, and then also provide more reliable real-time parking availability information to the public.
Okay, so it's not about the gates, that the cameras that lift the gates. It's about seeing how many cars are parked and where they're parked?
Yes, it's about the parking utilization. So the amendment will be, we're proposing, is about $1 million over 60 months. It's a $325,000 one-time capital cost plus some monthly charges of about $11,000 over that five-year term. And it really allows us, like I said, to really enhance the data collection that we get on parking utilization. And I also want to just express that this is a highly sensitive, privacy-compliant system. So it does not collect identifiable information, even though they are overhead sensors. They don't collect license plates or faces or the make or model of vehicles. They just generate sufficient pixelated information to identify whether or not a parking space is available or it has a car parked in the space.
Okay, so with all of this data collection, I mean, where does that go and who has access to it? I mean, is it...
This is just going to our parking enforcement team. And we are simply utilizing it as a way to, enhance the parking services that we provide to our residents and to really identify in a better way what parking spaces are available, to avoid having cars circulating and looking for spaces when they don't quite understand whether there are spaces available. I think it's really going to enhance that service we provide.
Okay, so it's not a tool for law enforcement.
It is not a tool for law enforcement.
All right. Real quick, there is a parcel at the Park City Police Department there off of 224. that will be given to High Valley Transit?
Yes, this is something that High Valley Transit has requested. It's a small piece of property, 0.07 acres, right near the police department that's owned by Parksy's Redevelopment Agency. And High Valley Transit has requested that it be donated towards the 224 bus rapid transit project. What they plan to install there is a BRT station that will have a shelter, a platform, a waiting area that's going to benefit our residents and visitors. And then the sidewalk will shift behind that station to reduce conflicts between transit riders and pedestrians.
All right. Also, a contract to replace the temporary Marsac roundabout peak season signal to a permanent signal. Why do we need a permanent one here? I mean, just rolling that one in didn't work this winter, or what?
Yeah, you know, we've been using that temporary signal for a couple of years to evaluate the traffic patterns through that roundabout. And one of the challenges of that Marsac roundabout is the entry from Old Town Transit Center into the roundabout by our buses. And what is challenging at times, I mean, it's also sort of an interesting, unique thing to have a roundabout right outside of a transit center. But as those buses are entering into the roundabout, a lot of times, given the heavy traffic that's headed north through that roundabout, the buses are not able to exit the Old Town Transit Center in a timely fashion. And so they're getting kind of clogged in the Old Town Transit Center, which is why we've been utilizing that temporary light to evaluate, you know, whether or not a more permanent solution is warranted. And we decided that it really is. And the purpose of this permanent transit signal will really be just to identify when a bus is queued to enter into the roundabout. And when that happens, the signal will turn on and allow the bus to actually enter the roundabout without having to wait for the through traffic that's headed north.
All right. But again, why do we need a permanent one? Why didn't the temporary one work? Because we don't even have it up now. I mean, it kind of goes away with the winter traffic.
That's true, but what we found with the temporary signal is it's manually run by a police officer, and we're using it enough that we've decided that this permanent transit signal really will, you know, help deliver that on-time service by our transportation team and our transit system. And we're using it enough, and the signal will come on enough that I think it's a worthwhile expense. We've also designed it really carefully with UDOT to, you know, meet the design standards of Old Town. It's just going to be a pole with the light fixture on top. It's not an overhanging traffic signal, as people might imagine, that, you know, exists in other places. Also, the city's only covering 30% of signal costs. UDOT's going to cover 70%, and they're also managing the project.
All right. And real quick, we haven't seen this in a while, a request for a level 4 special event permit. This is coming, I think, from Deer Valley Resort for a mountain biking competition.
That's right. We're really excited about this. Deer Valley would like to bring the U.S. Open of Mountain Biking. It's a level 4 permit, as you mentioned. That's one of our highest levels of special event tiers. That means we're expecting between 500 and 5,000 people per day. But this is really exciting. It's going to be a 4-day downhill competition, September 10th through 13th at Snow Park. It's free general admission, although RSVPs are requested. The service fees that we're anticipating are going to be around $41,000. We're really excited about this. The expected attendance over those 4 days is about 9,000 people, but we're waiting to see how those RSVPs come in as we sort of decide whether or not we need to implement our transportation mitigation plan. We really invite the community to come out. This is something that's really great for the city, has a great economic impact. You know, it really solidifies and continues to solidify Park City's position as a mountain biking destination.
Okay, thanks, Heather. And Adam, anything else you wanted to add?
No, thanks for having us.
Okay, Heather Sneddon and Adam Lenhard with Park City Municipal. Thank you. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, the Summit County Stormwater Coalition is hosting its 5th annual Trails, Trash, and Tunes event this Saturday. And on the phone, I'm not quite sure who I have. I was looking for 2 phone calls, but only have 1. So, who's this?
It's me, Leslie. It's Kelsey.
Okay.
From Summit County.
Okay, no, you show up as Alex Stevens, but just, okay. So, should we expect to hear from Christine as well?
I know she's traveling. I think she might call in, but I'm not sure if she will be able to make it.
Okay. Well, this Trash, our Trails Trash and Tunes is becoming an annual community event. Tell us when and where it's going to be held.
So this year we're excited to host it at New Park Amphitheater. We've moved it around a couple times over the last 5 years just to target different trail systems. It'll be this Saturday, June 6th, from 12 to 3:30. We will have Changing Lanes for Mountain Town Music as our musical thing. We'll have a weed pull, a course of trash cleanup, educational booths for attendees to learn something new, and, of course, a beer garden by our local favorite brewery, Offset.
Okay, so what do people need to bring if they're going to attend?
I would bring a water bottle, shade. It looks like it's going to be pretty sunny. We've moved it to June 6th, National Trails Day. So I know there's some other trail events going on, and we hope people can come to our event afterwards.
All right. And then what about parking?
We're really encouraging. This year is, I think, our best location for people to walk, bike, or take public transit. There is parking at New Park, but we highly encourage it to be a car-free zone.
Okay. Do people need to register to let you know that they're coming? And if so, how?
No, you don't need to register, but we would appreciate it just so we would know how many people are coming. You can get more information at summitcounty.info/TTT, and you can register there as well.
All right. As you mentioned, the event coincides with National Trails Day. Is there a connection between trail stewardship and stormwater protection?
You know, it's just an environmental stewardship thing. We started just as stormwater, but because of the activity with other organizations wanting to get involved, Trails has gotten involved too. So Basin Rec will be there to do some trail stewardship education.
All right. So how does removing litter and invasive weeds help protect our local waterways?
Well, you'll have to come to the event and come to our booth and find out. They do coincide. And right, the big thing I wanted to push this year is I think we all noticed the lack of winter. So what happens with there's a lack of winter for the summer and our waterways, there's going to be a lack of water quantity. So things that people can do to help protect the water quality, you can learn at our event.
All right. Many people, of course, hear the term stormwater, but may not fully understand it. So what is stormwater?
Stormwater essentially is the rain and the surface waters. But in Park City and the mountains, it's the runoff from our snow. So like I was saying, when we have a lack of snowpack, we have a lack of water quantity.
Yeah, and so where does this rainwater and snow melt go after it enters a storm drain?
That's a big point I wanted to make. A lot of people, we have a survey at our stormwater booth, which we highly encourage you guys to come visit. A lot of people think it goes to the sewer district and it gets treated, but it doesn't. It goes directly into our waterways. It goes directly into Silver Creek, McLeod Creek, and Jordanelle, all of our surface waters. It does infiltrate as well into our groundwater, which then can resurface into our surface, but it's not treated.
So what are some of the most common pollutants that enter the stormwater system?
It ranges. A lot of it, I mean, a big one this year is going to be a fertilizer, I think, just because fertilizer can cause harmful algae blooms when we have low water and high temperature. It's one of the factors that goes into it. So just follow the directions if you're using fertilizer. We all like to have green gardens and green lawns, but don't apply it before it rains, right, and things like that.
Okay. And then just so all of this stuff, you know, when you look at the asphalt and all of the liquids that come out of a vehicle, all of that goes into the stormwater as well?
All of it goes into the stormwater. I had a friend once who was like, I love it when it rains because it cleans everything. And I'm just like, no, it doesn't clean everything. It goes right into our waterways.
So what happens to that then? It just becomes what? Just
it's
more
in
toxic?
Our waterways.
Increasing toxin,
yeah.
Though, wherever it lands?
Wherever it drains to, whichever water body it does, yeah. And it affects aquatic life. It affects our fishing industry.
Yeah, so if it's not getting cleaned up, I mean, at some point we're going to hit a tipping point, no?
I think this year could be our tipping point. I mean, I hope not, but like I said, we're going to have a lack of water quantity, so every pollutant's going to count this year. And coming down to every person, too.
So as a Park City resident, and I know you're with the county, I see a stormwater fee in my water bill. What am I paying for?
You're paying for the infrastructure. Park City maintains their infrastructure, the stormwater infrastructure. They make sure the piping is sized well, and they do the maintenance of that.
Yeah, so any idea? I mean, does Summit County also charge a stormwater fee?
Summit County does not charge a stormwater fee. We have talked about it, and it might come about in the future, but right now we do not.
So do you have any idea what kind of projects that stormwater fee collection would pay for?
I would like to see it pay for projects of Summit County. I mean, we don't have it yet, but in the future, some more progressive projects. I know that maybe you guys see some ponds around town. Those stormwater ponds are designed to infiltrate, like trap the sediment and contaminants. But there's more progressive stormwater features that do infiltration, like rain gardens and other more progressive projects. That's what I would like to see.
Okay. And I guess if somebody can't attend the event to learn more, what are a few simple actions they can take to protect our local waterways?
You know, it's really simple things like pick up dog poop. No one wants to see dog poop. Dog poop is actually pretty harmful to our waterways. Pick up trash. Use less salt. That's one thing that we have. We have a TSS problem in our waterways. Use less salt on your waterways for de-icing. Follow the directions for fertilizer and for salt usage.
Okay, what is it?
Vehicle maintenance. Don't wash your car on your driveway because all that soap is going to go into our waterways.
Where does it go if I go to the car wash?
It actually goes to the treatment plant. It's recycled. That water is recycled, and then it goes to the treatment plant and it's treated.
Okay. You mentioned TSS about salt. What does that mean?
Oh, total suspended solids. It's a contaminant. It's an impairment of our waterways.
Okay. All right.
Caused by salt. And yeah.
Yeah. All right. Kelsey, anything else you wanted to add about Saturday's event?
Just I hope everyone can come. You come for the music, come for the beer, come to learn something new. We don't care. Just come.
Okay. Kelsey Christensen is Summit County's stormwater manager. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you, Leslie.
The Utah State Auditor's Office has launched a new dashboard to give residents insight into activity of one of the state's most powerful boards. Utah State Auditor Tina Cannon's online dashboard details the financial activity and other publicly available information for the Military Installation Development Authority. The Utah News Dispatch reports the office built the dashboard after being flooded with requests for more information about MIDA as debate increased over the recently approved Box Elder County Data Center. Cannon called MIDA a special district with city-like powers, including bonding, land use authority, and the ability to control and capture tax increment or taxes resulting from new development. The difference is that we as citizens don't get to vote for our elective representatives on MIDA. Certainly they come from different jurisdictions, but as a whole, there's no way to change that makeup. Cannon also emphasized that MIDA is a very complex organization, and the dashboard now available on the Transparent Utah website includes information from 2007, when lawmakers first created the special district, to present day. That information includes some legislative history and power, project summaries and maps, documents and meeting materials, and a financial activity trend line. Well, Park City Ski and Snowboard has announced that Alias Lewis will serve as its new executive director. Park City Ski and Snowboard represents 5 youth winter sports club in the Wasatch Back with more than 1,000 athletes participating. That includes alpine skiing, freestyle, free skiing, Nordic skiing, and snowboarding. Lewis fills the role that former director Christy Hine left after 7 years at the helm. As a longtime Park City resident, former board member of Park City Ski and Snowboard, and alum of the ski team, Lewis has a strong connection to PCSS. He also competed for the U.S. Alpine ski team, and he raced on the World Cup circuit, which the team says will give him a valuable appreciation of the long-term impact of its programs. You're listening to KPCW Park City.